Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. On the one hand, the federal government should be congratulated for trying to do a year's worth of work in just a couple of weeks. I'm talking about the dispersal of almost $350 billion of aid to American small businesses through the Paycheck Protection Program. On the other hand, the rollout was a debacle. Yes, 1.6 million American businesses, small businesses, received funds, but they account for only 4% of all of the small companies in America. And by the way, small businesses employ almost half of all U.S. workers. So if the U.S. economy is going to get going again and going strong, we will need small businesses to help lead that charge, which means more needs to be done to help them now. So what are the best next steps? This hour on Point, saving America's small businesses. And we're going to start today with Johnny Liu. He's one of America's 300 million small business 30 million small business entrepreneurs. He owns Mantra Coffee in Azusa, California. Johnny Liu, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much, Meghna.
So first of all, Johnny, tell me a little bit about your business.
Well, we are a coffee shop here in Azusa, California. We serve our local community. You know, we have one location, one storefront, and we're open for business right now, still through all of this.
you've been able to stay open for business. Okay. And how are you making that happen?
Well, you know, dramatic cuts in hours right now so far. We used to be open 7 a.m. to midnight daily. We are a college town. and dramatically slashing that and opening only to go for right now.
I see. Okay, so reducing the amount of service that you usually provide, though. That's what it sounds like, Johnny.
Oh, right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. And how many, what has that meant for your employees?
You know, I mean, we are a family, much like a lot of the small businesses, I'm sure, around the country. We've just been having to roll with the punches. Everybody's been trying to help everybody cover hours, and we're making it as simple as it is for them to be able to come in and have all just everything that they need, from masks all the way to gloves, and making sure that we are using safety, you know, as a priority.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so we're going to talk about the Paycheck Protection Program here in just a second,
right,
Johnny. But I do want to ask you, are you concerned about the viability of your business in the near future? Do you think you'll be able to stay open 2 weeks from now, a month from now?
No, not at this rate. What has been the most discouraging is that, you know, the $350 billion dollars that was advertised for small businesses, we applied right in the beginning, as soon as we could. And, you know, we found out via media outlets that the funding had dried up.
You didn't hear from the bank that you applied to?
No, it was after that, right? So, of course, it was breaking news. And then later that day, it was kind of like sorry, we've run out of funding. So hopefully, you know, phase two.
Okay.
Right?
Did you hear anything from the bank after you said you applied as soon as you could for the Paycheck Protection Program to the bank? Did you hear anything from the bank after that at all in terms of where your application was in the process, where had it been forwarded to the SBA?
Right. So everything with the bank was really good as far as, oh, we got your application. And again, these are all emails, of course. And don't forget to log on so that you can make sure you have all your information. And of course, immediately, as soon as we got those emails, it would always, you know, respond. And then finally, it was, you know, it was a pretty smooth process. to apply as far as getting everything in, and we had regular sort of communication. And then a week and a half, 2 weeks, 2 weeks went by, and you know, nothing. And then that final email saying, "Sorry, you know, we dried up." Yeah.
So, how did you feel? What did you do when you find out you didn't get any funds?
So, Meghna, the first thing I did was I went out for a walk, and I had a mask on, and you know, it was just me, and I was overwhelmed with a sense of dread and despair. I know that sounds really sort of dark. I'm not the type of person that tends to want to give into cynicism, to think that, oh, there are these large conspiracies, you know, sort of, you know, nobody cares about small businesses, et cetera. But the feeling was this overcoming sense of dread, like I was saying, because everything that we've worked towards, and it's so hard to open small businesses, period. And we are just a little bit over 4 years old, right? So, you know, they always say like the two to 4 year period is like sort of the hardest. And then after you sort of get beyond that, you have this stride. Well, I will tell you, that feeling was definitely one that I had to right away engage and sort of process through and say, Johnny, of course to myself, Johnny, everything will be okay. And sort of just keep walking, both literal and figuratively.
I was going to say it is a tragic but perfect metaphor for where you find yourself as a small business owner. Johnny, do you know anybody in your community of small business owners that got PPP funds?
Right. So, see, I was going to ask you that. No, I do not know anybody. And I think what, again, going back to what was most sort of discouraging about all this is something that's praised for small businesses. In our small community and in my small network of people that I know, business owners, and probably about 10, 15 of us, nobody has received anything from PPP.
Okay. Well, I mean, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin has said that 1.6 million small loans or 1.6 million small businesses did receive funds of some kind. That's But we're going to explore a lot more about who was in that 1.6 million and also the fact that there are 30 million small businesses in America, which means that 96% of small business owners didn't get anything. Well, so Johnny Liu, owner and founder of Mantra Coffee in Azusa, California. Thank you so much for being with us, Johnny, and I wish you all the very best of luck.
Thank you, Meghna. Have a great rest of your time.
Well, we did hear from a number of small business owners about the challenges they faced in trying to apply for the Paycheck Protection Program. Here's Erin from North New Jersey, and she talked about her fiancé's experience in applying for the program.
My fiance is a painting contractor. He owns his own painting company. He applied for the Paycheck Protection Program the first day that you could apply. He never heard back. And after about a week when he still hadn't heard back, he called TD Bank, which is his local bank, and the money was already gone. So as you can imagine, he's stressed and frustrated. And we were even more frustrated to find out that the money was going to hedge funds and large companies who basically got the funds before they were even released.
That's On Point listener Erin. Well, joining us now is Diana Ransom. She's with us via Skype from Hudson, New York. She's the features editor at Inc. magazine. She's been covering small business and entrepreneurs for many, many years. Diana, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much.
Okay, so first of all, let's take a step back here. What was the original intent of the Paycheck Protection Program?
I think taking a step back is a good thing. We'll all go back to March 27th. President Trump signed into law this $2.3 trillion coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act, and with it authorized the Paycheck Protection Program, which was, as everybody else talked about, is a $349 billion forgivable loan program run through the United States Small Business Administration. So these are forgivable loans. So if your company vows to use the proceeds on payroll costs, which include employee compensation of up to $100,000 and benefits along with, you know, say, rent or mortgage interest or even some utilities, you can have the loans forgiven. Even if you don't get the loans forgiven, say you want to use the money for something else, for instance, it's still actually a really, really good deal. The loans have a 1% fixed interest rate, no fees, and a repayment that can be deferred for up to 6 months, but no more than a year. So basically, the essence of this was to help businesses that have 500 or fewer employees, basically keep people on the payroll. Mm-hmm. They did make some special carve-outs, which have been controversial for restaurants and other hospitality companies.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a second because it's a big part of this story. But in order for folks to understand really what happened in this critical two-week period, I just want to lay it out there. One of the key things is that the money was being dispersed through banks. Is that right?
That's right. So on April 3rd is when banks were allowed to launch their applications for the PPP program. Actually, Paycheck Protection Program. So April 3rd comes, and a number of banks across the country were not ready. The rollout was chaotic, to put it mildly. Yes, thank you. Yeah. So the guidance on how to actually disperse the loans was very limited. You know, it's a matter of liability. So what it came down to with banks. So the requirements for this loan are that banks need, or that small businesses getting loans needed to maintain their headcount, for instance. So the banks themselves were wondering, okay, so how do I control, or how do I discern whether that small business has maintained, their headcount through the period? So there are all sorts of these little tiny niggling little questions that the banks didn't actually know how to answer. So they didn't want to launch their application right away. So that hurt the businesses that ended up, say, going with the Chase. Say there's a business that operated with Chase.
Well, Diana, you're hearing the music there, so hang on just for a second. I'll let you pick up that thought when we come back. We are talking about next steps and what we really need to do to save small businesses in America. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We are talking this hour broadly about next steps that the nation needs to take to save American small businesses. And we're also focusing on what happened with the rollout of the Paycheck Protection Program. And I'm joined today by Diana Ransom. She's features editor at Inc. magazine, and she's been covering this quite extensively. Diana, before the break, you were talking to us about how it seemed as there were some some glitchy problems with the rollout here, one of them being that there was a lack of clarity, I think, around the rules that banks needed to follow to disperse these funds, and a lot of them weren't ready when applications started rolling in. Okay, so that makes sense, although one wonders why there wasn't more clarity. I'm also wondering, were they ready for the volume of applications? And if not, why not? They had to expect that thousands upon thousands of businesses would be rushing for help.
Yeah, that's a really fair point and something the SBA should address at some point. There were issues with the website. I think the SBA server went down at one point. They're running a number of programs. It's basically alphabet soup for the government right now. So there's the economic injury development or disaster loan program, which was launched earlier in March, which was run directly out of the SBA. So they were trying to field a lot of different fronts at the same time. You know, I'm not trying to excuse their lack of clarity in this process, but I do want to acknowledge that they were dealing with a lot at that moment.
Fair point. Can I just jump in here? Because, I mean, I think this what I'm about to say mirrors reporting that I know that you've done and stories you've heard from small business owners. But we've heard stories from small business owners that, you know, they got in there right when the application period opened, like minutes after the application period opened. This is with, you know, big banks, not small community banks, some big banks that you would think would be able to handle a pulse in applications, and then didn't hear really much of anything until 2 weeks later when, in some cases, they found out that their applications hadn't even been forwarded to the SBA. So something really has went wrong here. And I want to just play a clip from Republican Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. This is him on Monday on CNBC's Squawk Box. And because he's the chairman of the Senate Committee overseeing small businesses, he talked about vaguely sort of who got approved versus who didn't for the Paycheck Protection Program.
There were glitches made. There's no doubt about it. In the end, take comfort in the fact the money has to go to the workers. Ultimately, it doesn't really matter who a worker is working for. We want to keep them employed. This is not a bailout of any company. But I think certainly the goal here is to get the money into the hands of businesses who don't have anywhere else to go for money, including, you know, the stock market, shareholders, you know, other sort of credit lines.
Senator Marco Rubio on Monday. Diana, it's that last part of what the senator said. That may have been the goal, right, of the Paycheck Protection Program. But I'm reading reporting here that says some 70 publicly traded companies got funds through PPP.
Oh, wow. I hadn't seen that. Okay. Yeah, they relaxed all criteria when it came to these loans. So normally this is all run through the SBA's 7A loan program, which is basically what that means is it's a loan that's backed by the Small Business Administration for, you know, right now it's 100% backed. So basically if the bank gives you that loan, they are bound to get 100% back even if your company goes belly up. So effectively, what they did was they took this traditional program and just decimated the standard requirements. So you, as a business, you need to traditionally show that your business has been harmed. You need to show that you can't, you couldn't get credit elsewhere. They relaxed all those requirements. So what I think may have happened, and I can't be certain of this, but I think there are a lot of businesses out there that applied for funding that actually, frankly, didn't need it. So maybe it's the public companies that could have raised money through capital markets, or maybe it's the business that, you know, is actually frankly doing okay right now, but they're just decided that they'd rather not pay their payroll, if the government's willing to do it for them. So it's sad to say, it sounds like some businesses got funding that perhaps shouldn't have. At the same time, everybody needed, you can make the argument that everybody needs help right now.
Yeah.
So it does seem like if one business didn't get it, another one did. And to Rubio's point, everybody needs help.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Well, so as you're saying, I mean, I think a lot of attention people are paying a lot of attention to examples like Shake Shack. It's $1.6 billion company. They got $10 million from the Paycheck Protection Program, returned it, though, after some withering criticism. Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, they've got 150 locations, $250 million company. They received $20 million in funding. Potbelly chain of sandwich shops, a similar story there. 400 locations, $89 million company. I mean, are these the beneficiaries of those special carve-outs that you were talking about for restaurants?
They are. And what other another rule that they relaxed this time around with those with that program I just mentioned is there are these affiliate rules. So if a business has basically a chain of other businesses, they decided to the government decided to relax that rule that said that if you have a chain of businesses, you can't do this. What they did was to look what they decided to do was to look at the individual location. So say I'm a you know, I am an individual owner of a Ruth's Chris. I can have, and I have 15 employees. I can apply independently of my company for that money. So that's one rule that they relaxed. Also, just generally speaking, if they have 500 or fewer employees, they could apply anyway. And they did make this carve out for restaurants and other kinds of hospitality companies. So this is like three prongs.
Right. Well, and Diana, just so you know, and that everyone else knows who's listening right now, when I mentioned the 70 publicly traded companies that received money through the Paycheck Protection Program, that reporting came from The Washington Post just yesterday. And they looked at SEC filings, recent SEC filings. So at least according to the Post, 70 companies that may have otherwise had other avenues to capital got some money through the Paycheck Protection Program. And, you know, when we're talking about sort of what constitutes a small business in America, we got an interesting call from an On Point listener. This is Linda from Albuquerque, New Mexico. She tried to apply for funds through the PPP, but gave up because it was so complicated. And she wanted to talk about the fact that businesses with 5 to 10 employees are being lumped in with these larger companies that have, you know, dozens or even up to 500 employees.
We're a completely different category. The very definition of small business is wrong. And true small local businesses bring so much benefit to the community that is undervalued. Connection, experience, supporting local schools and nonprofits, tax base, spending our dollars locally, and a unique identity that cannot be recreated online or through a chain business. We need a separate program to specifically address the needs of this type of business. Otherwise, we will fail and our communities will lose their very uniqueness.
That's Linda from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Well, joining us now from Irvine, California is Mirza Baradaran. She's a professor of law at the University of California, Irvine, and author of How the Other Half Banks and the Color of Money, Black Banks and the Racial Wealth Gap. Professor Baradaran, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me.
And also now joining us from Cincinnati, Ohio, is Derek Peebles. He's executive director of the American Independent Business Alliance and began his career in small business banking. Derek Peebles, welcome to you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Derek, let me just hear from you first. You heard Diana describe what the intent of the Paycheck Protection Program was. I mean, $349 billion is not a small amount of money, but of course, it's not anywhere near what the 30 million American small businesses across the country may need right now. So do you think it was, you know, a decent first start, though?
Well, we do. I mean, we understand that the CARES Act was intended as a down payment to help small businesses survive. However, like your previous caller, we support a specific type of small business. We support independent businesses. But we definitely understand that the down payment isn't going where it's needed fast enough. Mm-hmm. So,
and how, I mean, have you heard similar stories from the businesses that, that you represent about the different kinds of challenges they had or did they have in applying for these funds?
Sure. So one thing that we're hearing is that many of these banks are only offering the PPP to existing loan customers. So countless small business owners, independent business owners that we represent, really never stood a chance. And so one of the stories that we've heard was from a business owner, a minority-owned business owner who had a relationship with their savings bank. And they, like many people, applied for the application on the first day. They soon heard that the money ran out. And then a few days later, they heard from their bank. And what their banker told them was that with the amount of applications that they had received was more in the past week and a half than they had received over the past 15 years. And so you had a mass capacity issue with the banks, with the smaller banks, but with the larger banks, they weren't even really considering independent business owners who didn't already have an existing loan relationship with them.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that's really kind of been confusing is that a lot of businesses were hearing that if you had a relationship with your bank, whether it was a checking account, savings, or whatever. But what we've come to understand is that these banks were only offering it to existing loan members.
Right. Okay.
So that was a real challenge.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. So on that point, an On Point listener called us who works for a large bank. And he said he's working on applications still right now and that the process has been very convoluted and that the guidance from the Small Business Association was very unclear. And he also said there's no process to assess the means of business. So some businesses who weren't greatly impacted or aren't suffering as much right now are still able to apply and receive funds.
Unfortunately, because this money is finite, there will be many people, many much needed businesses who will not get the funding that they need. And there will be plenty of businesses who are using this opportunity to apply for essentially what is a very cheap loan, even if they have to pay it back. The terms of this are so friendly that it's worth for almost any business of almost any size that can meet the criteria that SBA has outlined to go ahead and apply. There's nothing to lose for them.
Professor Baradaram, let me turn to you on that, because it sounds like one assessment could be that this was the idea for the Paycheck Protection Program was a good one, but its means of execution is where the failure lies. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, from the moment that I reviewed the legislation, I could tell that it was going to be a big problem. I mean, the day that it was announced, many banks said, well, look, it's not worth it to us to do this. And it was chaos. They lobbied for extra percentage points. I mean, the whole structure of the thing was to go through banks and let banks choose the customers to which they were lending. Now, the loans itself, like the underwriting, was done by Congress. All the risk was put on Treasury. So the banks, all they had to do was file the applications. But early on, the bigger banks, especially Wells Fargo, Bank of America, and most of the bigger banks, which actually control about 80% of the banking sector anyway, said that they were only going to do it for their credit customers, which means their bigger customers, the ones that they were exposed to. And the cost benefit for banks is very simple. They don't want to do any work that isn't going to end up in profits for them, or if it doesn't risk their own assets. And so they chose these companies. And who are those companies? They're going to be the largest companies. They're going to be the ones with the lawyers and the existing relationships with the banks and the least need for these loans. So a ton of small businesses applied day one. I helped several that I know, and none of them even got a response from their bank, mm-hmm. right? We're seeing now small lawsuits trickle up. I imagine we'll see a lot more of small banks saying that the banks just chose their big customers to help and kind of scuttled their smaller businesses. And that was something that anyone who has been following this industry or anything would have expected just from the way that this thing was set up.
Well, so I want to go into what you said in a moment here, right? Because what it reveals about the banking sector and also the struggles of small businesses is something that I want to explore. But, you know, your point about like the big five or however many there are left of banks controlling so much of the financial sector. We have some tape of Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, who did respond to the shortage of funds in the PPP. He was on CNN State of the Union on Sunday, and he highlighted the speed at which the SBA rolled out the program.
It was 3 weeks ago that the president signed the law. We had the program up and running in a week, which was unprecedented. It's impacted now over 30 million Americans. And let me just comment, the community banks have done an extraordinary job. 60% of the loans have been approved by banks that have $10 billion of assets and below, and 20% with $1 billion and below.
That's the Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin on Sunday. Professor Baradaran, I mean, he's saying that he's, according to him, the majority of the number of loans were approved by community banks.
Yeah, so that's right, actually. Yeah, and you know, stats, you have to look at, you know, stats can be manipulated in all sorts of ways. A lot of the money went to the big banks. But yes, community banks did better for small businesses and like just, you know, businesses with fewer employees than did the large banks. That is always the case. The smaller the bank, the more likely they are to cater to smaller businesses. But if you look broadly across the banking sector, most of the assets, most of the loans, most of the deposits are in the big banks.
Yes.
So by number, the small banks look to be more numerous, but by power and market sort of breadth, the big banks control all of it. Same with the big companies. And even the way that the PPP was set up, I mean, yes, well-intentioned, but it didn't actually capture a lot of the needs of the small businesses to begin with. So one is it just focused on payroll. So it said less than 500 employees, which does cabin a little bit who benefits. But there's a ton of small businesses that have a lot of other expenses like utilities and rent. And though some of these funds could go to that, the amount that you could get was based on just your employees. So the way that this thing was set up was fine. It could have been administered in a fair way, but generally there was a lot in there that this outcome was very easy to predict, especially the fact that you have these massive companies. I mean, I think there's like 10 to 20 of the biggest, you know, restaurants and other companies that I don't know if they needed the money. Probably everyone needs the money, but they certainly didn't need it more than the thousands of small businesses around the country.
So when we come back, we're going to talk a lot more about why it's so important for the future of the whole country to really help small businesses right now and what the next steps should be, because there could be more money coming down the pike pretty soon. So Professor Mirza Baradaran and Derek Peebles and Diana Ransom, hang on here for just a second. We'll be right back. This is On Point.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tomorrow on the show, we are going to be taking a look at how the COVID-19 pandemic is really shining a very bright light on how this country treats its elderly and its infirm. We'll take specifically a look at nursing homes, for example. And so we want to hear from you out there. Are you one of our nation's elderly? Do you live in a nursing home? Do you have a family member who's in a nursing home? What challenges are you facing right now in the struggle to beat back the COVID-19 pandemic? What are you seeing? We're at 617-353-0683. That's 617-353-0683 to leave us a voicemail for tomorrow's program. Today, we are talking about what it's going to take to truly help America's 30 million small businesses. The Paycheck Protection Program was the federal government's first crack at it. Didn't exactly go as planned, so we're going to be talking about what could be done if more funds are on the way. And I'm joined today by Derek Peebles. He's executive director of the American Independent Business Alliance, and he joins us from Cincinnati. Mirza Baradaram joins us from Irvine, California. She's a professor of law at the University of California, Irvine. And Diana Ransom is with us from Hudson, New York. She's features editor at Inc. magazine. And Diana, I think I wanted to spend a minute here talking about the role that small businesses play in the U.S. economy and why this is really a particularly important part of this of the economy to help as much as we can right now? Because I think the numbers say a lot. I've said the 30 million small businesses several times in the course of this hour. I'm seeing that almost half, at least 48% of American workers are employed by these small businesses. So, you know, they're a hugely important part of the economy.
Yeah, I was actually thinking that that number was a little bit higher. In terms of the level of employment at small businesses.
It probably is. I'm just looking from. I was looking at 2018 numbers from the SBA. So by now they might actually be higher. Point taken.
You're right. I mean, this is a pretty dramatic turn of events for businesses, and it's unfair. And it will definitely change the face of America, and hopefully not forever. Hopefully this is only temporary, but it is pretty tragic. And especially when you hear these sort of the sad stories about businesses not getting the funding that they needed in time, and basically closing their doors. There's still a chance. Like you pointed out, there's still opportunity for these companies to try again. There's another tranche of funding supposedly on the way. And fortunately, it looks like there will be at least a little bit more requirements put on this funding. I don't imagine too much, but there's talk about devoting $60 billion at least to funding directly for community banks. So that should help the smaller businesses of the world get the funding they need.
Mm. Derek, do you mind if I ask? I'd love your take on the role that small businesses play in the economy, because I've read before that they're the engines of hiring, especially because they may hire workers at a faster rate than, say, a larger corporation. Even if those corporations, their numbers of workers are still pretty big, it's those small businesses that need them quickly, which is the kind of hiring we're going to need to see to pull out of this, whatever. I don't want to call it an official recession yet, but whatever we're in right now, we're gonna need small businesses to help us pull out of it.
Yes, I think, you know, the role that small businesses play is very crucial to community survival. And so, I mean, it also has a cultural, it has a social mm-hmm. Component to that. And so we also know that local businesses often keep the flow of the dollar circulating in a community. And so we do think that there's going to need programs and services given to workforce development after the crisis. But stats have showed historically that these are the type of businesses that create long-term jobs. When you keep the dollar flowing in the community and circulating multiple times, that increases wages. And so we understand the importance. And I think if you haven't really realized what an economy could look like without local business. I mean, we're kind of living it now. I mean, you're able to see it.
Yeah, you absolutely are able to see it to walking down the main streets of cities and towns all over the country right now. So let's talk for a little bit about what might come next here. I want to go back and listen to a moment from Sunday where Treasury Secretary Mnuchin was on CNN with Jake Tapper. And Jake Tapper asked about an analysis that indicated that overall the Paycheck Protection Program could need more than $1 trillion to serve all of America's small businesses. And here's how Secretary Mnuchin responded.
We think that another $300 billion, that's what we're talking about, should be sufficient to reach almost everybody. And let me just comment, we've also reached an agreement on SBA disaster loans. So there'll be another $50 billion appropriated, which can do over $300 billion of disaster loans. So these two programs are unprecedented response to small businesses, which I think you know is about 50% of the American workforce.
That's Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin on Sunday. Diana Ransom, I'm seeing that there could be forward movement on more funds this week. There are certain holdups here that seem to be partisan holdups. Can you tell us a little bit about what the status is of next steps right now?
Well, it looks like they are coming to an agreement. The Senate should be in agreement by 4 p.m. today is the expectation, 4 p.m. Eastern. Okay. And the House is expected to take it up on Thursday. I guess there were holdups. The Democrats wanted to make sure that there was funding for increased coronavirus testing and also funding for hospitals, which Republicans have acceded to, recognizing that these are important for basically ongoing survival. So they came to agreement on those. And so it looks like that will come together today.
Okay. Well, Diana Ransom, a features editor at Inc., thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Professor Baradaran, let me turn back to you here. So we get another crack at this, right, in order to get more funds to more small businesses. How should it be done differently?
I think you have to look at the way that things are typically done and really rethink whether that's a good idea in the first place. So the way that we usually send out loans to people when we want to do it is through the banking sector. And this is a relic of a history of banks being the only ones with the technology capable of doing the clearing and payments and all of that stuff. And in that history, we forced banks to serve every single community, and we forced them to be small, and all banks were community banks. Now that we've sort of deregulated banks, and now banks are massive banks that are doing all sorts of stuff, maybe we need to rethink whether banks are the proper sort of go-between, middleman between the Treasury and the people. And it seems that this program has really exposed the flaws of that system, which is that if the funds are coming from the Treasury and the intended recipients are the people in the economy, small businesses and actually people, right, employees. So I don't want to abstract away that we're talking about people's lives and people's ability to pay rent and buy food and acquire shelter. If the help is intended at the end of the day to those people, how do we get it to them? Banks maybe aren't the best way to do it. So send it to them directly. I've proposed, things like doing it through, the public means that we have available through the postal system, through a public option. Have the Fed send it directly. The Treasury already has relationships with a lot of these businesses. Just cut out the middleman. You don't need a bank like Chase or Bank of America or Wells Fargo to hold up these funds, which is exactly what they did to the most needy recipients.
Can I just jump in here? I, your point is well taken, but I suppose the unfortunate cliche of you go to war with the army you have is what's popping up in my mind right now. And it makes some logical sense to me that Treasury and the SBA said, well, look, these banks have existing relationships with small businesses. And so let's just use what we have.
Yeah. So does the IRS. So does the Treasury. So does the Social Security Administration. Every agency has a pre-existing relationship with these companies. And the banks actually don't. I mean, there's a lot of small businesses that just use these banks for deposits. And those businesses were not well served. It was only the businesses who had credit relationships, which is a fundamentally different relationship with a bank than is a deposit relationship. And so banks just chose their customers to whom they had made loans before. That's not a big swath of the small business population. The SBA also has relationships with a lot of these companies. If it's about, do we know who this business is? Can we verify their identity? Can we make sure that this is not a fraudulent claim? A lot of government agencies can do that much better than, forging a new relationship.
And are they able to then also verify the amount of need? Because I think we're talking about something that's fundamentally different than the government cutting a fixed amount check to most American individuals or many American individuals.
Yeah, this program is based on self-reporting and a real sort of, a component of you have to prove that this is your payroll, right? You can't just use this money to put it in your corporate coffers. Although if you're a public company, those are trickier. But this is you show your payroll, you bring the receipts, you bring your pay stubs, and that's how much money you get. You are supposed to have all the documentation. So this is not really complicated underwriting, especially if you're a business that has been in operation for several years. All of the the underwriting requirements are laid out in the legislation. Mm. This is not like rocket science. It's not like a new loan.
Yeah. So Derek, if I may turn back to you, do these alternative, this a different idea of how to get money to small businesses appeal to you? Because as Professor Baradaran is also saying, it sounds like there's a bigger role for community banks. The businesses that you represent at the American Independent Business Alliance, what kind of institutions do they have relationships with?
Sure. So the majority of businesses we represent, and I would say it's about 20,000 independent business owners across 24 states in the country, and they're private, worker-owned, or cooperative or community-owned. They have at least 50% of their business is locally owned, and the decision-making authority is vested in the local owners. We also include, you know, whether that business has a limited number of outlets and geographic range. And so to answer your question, we do agree that more money should be moved into community banks because they have stronger relationships on the ground with these type of businesses that I just described. I also think that you can move a lot of this money into, since the underwriting is not very difficult, I think there are a lot of other organizations and NGOs that would be qualified to administer some of this funding. And we're already kind of seeing it with a couple of alliances that we have, such as in Madison, Wisconsin, in Arizona, where they have connected with their state governments, they've connected with their local counties, and these alliances are actually administering the funds directly to the local independent businesses. Mm. And so that's one way that we've seen funding get into the hands of the type of businesses that we represent, which are independently owned. So we feel that a lot of funding could be shifted towards, I don't know if I want to say, you know, non-bank lenders, but I think there's a lot of organizations that would be qualified to work and partner with a lot of the community banks on underwriting and making sure that the money is getting to the right place, because those relationships are very important, I think, for if the money is going to be shifted into community banks. I think it would be to their benefit mm-hmm. to partner with community organizations on how that funding is distributed.
Yeah. So in the last couple minutes that we have, I'm curious what both of you think about this. It seems that one thing we've seen about the impact of this pandemic is that different communities are feeling the impact in different ways, some much more than others. Are we at risk of the recovery also having various impact depending on who you are and where you are, and sort of this first rollout of PPP with small businesses is giving us a window into that? Professor Baradaran, what do you think?
Yes, of course. I mean, if history is any guide, the crisis, both the health crisis and the economic crisis, will affect us very differently. It will depend on how vulnerable we were before this. It will expose and heighten the pre-existing inequalities. As you can see already in the data, it's quite stunning how many more African Americans are dying from the coronavirus, how the economic crisis is going to hit those who are the quote-unquote essential workers in the economy more, those who have to be out and who have jobs that require them to actually, be out among a disaster, right? Sanitation workers, hospital workers, grocery store workers, and at the recovery as well. I mean, even as the stimulus checks are rolling out and PPP loans are going out, you're seeing that those companies and people who, you know, either don't have bank accounts, live in rural areas or places where these resources are not abundant, are getting those checks delayed weeks, months, and will have to struggle in the meantime while this virus ravages communities that were already not doing well. So absolutely the recovery, unless we focus on these issues and these vulnerable communities, this virus will certainly result in more, not less inequality and more, not less disparities in outcome.
Mm. Well, given all we've discussed today and what happened with the Paycheck Protection Program, it is little wonder why there's a lot of frustration out there with millions of small business owners in America who are so vital to the U.S. economy. We'll keep digging into this. Mirza Baradaran, professor of law at the University of California, Irvine, and author of How the Other Half Banks, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And Derek Peebles, executive director of the American Independent Business Alliance. Mr. Peebles, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken? Wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.